welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line right here on the Common Sense and Justice Network. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us as we make our weekly venture into the mysterious realm of the law. And I think it gets more mysterious each and every week. There's no doubt about it. We try each week to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. We do that each and every week. You can catch us at csjnetwork.com. Look for the archive, past Bobcasts, of course, we like to call them, as you know. But check those out. Give us a shout during the program, 253-471-9694. Email your questions just to jeff@bobpittman.com, jeff@bobpittman.com. Email the questions during the week, and we'll try to get to them during the very next Bobcast. So be sure to do just that. And today, it's my great pleasure, I have to tell you, my great, great pleasure to welcome Dennis Brislon to the program. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks, Bob. I'm all nervous and everything. remember, Bob Pittman is the guy that got me on the radio way back when. And on normal radio rather than internet intergalactic radio.
This is all over the world.
This is rather amazing.
Yeah.
But anyway, Bob got me on the radio, and I was so panicked about coming down to talk about trusts. I think I've been a trust lawyer probably a day and a half. I had my bar review materials under my arm, literally. I had a stack of books, and I was waiting for people to call with that perplexing
That's
question
right.
that I could not answer. So what really happens on radio?
Hey, we just have a good time.
I know. It's like
it's
a conversation with friends.
Oh, I know. It really is. You know, I was, as you know, we did, both of us did regular radio for many years. And one time I was in an elevator. I don't know. I was in some office building downtown Seattle. And I was just going from one, you know, maybe at one of the top floors down to the lobby. And I'm just standing there, and I'm minding my own business in the elevator. And this person kind of looks over at me and says, and I think I had said something to somebody as I got on the elevator. That's what it was. Anyway, he turns to me. He says, so what is it? Do you have like all these books around you when you do the program? And it's out of the blue. He heard my voice.
Well, he recognized your voice.
Yeah. And I said, well, no. I said, there wouldn't be any
No,
time.
I wing it. I now, make it all up.
That's right. But you know what? That was before we had internet. I mean, this really goes back. This is kind of scary. It was before we had regular internet access. And so,
right.
I mean, you could have, I suppose, brought the big book of laws.
See, if your break is long enough, you can look it up on the internet and then sound intelligent. That's what I did.
But there is no way. I mean, someone calls in with a question or, you know, and it's just, you've got to talk about it, and you will talk about it. There, you know, you don't have down airtime when you're on the radio.
Well, the truth of it is that after you've been an attorney for a while, the facts may change,
yeah.
And they do change, and they require you to be adaptable and creative, but the basic toolkits that you're working from are fairly stable.
Absolutely.
So in our world, being estate planners, we have some estate tools like wills and trusts,
yep.
powers of attorney, living wills,
yep.
all those things.
That's right.
But we also have some business tools that we regularly draw upon,
yeah.
like corporations, limited liability companies, and
yep.
so the way we use them may change for a particular client, but they're building blocks.
And we have common sense.
We do. And legal, and justice.
That's right.
I was looking Legal Line on the Common Sense and Justice Network. That's beautiful, Bob.
Well, you know, we had a great time, and we'll have a chance, two of us, to do a remote broadcast, I'm just sure. But we had so much fun out at the Fred Oldfield Western Arts and Heritage Center. We had a great audience, and we did a live recording, and, of course, that aired then last week. It's available as a Bobcast on the Common Sense and Justice Network website.
You know, I've been watching The Rifleman on RTV Network.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I saw the very first Rifleman show last night.
Oh, boy.
And it totally was amazing.
Yep.
But the little homilies that were administered in that show in a half an hour were American belief system at its best. And so
yep.
I picture you, much like Lucas McCain,
hey, all right.
standing for the right, standing for the good. He was a good neighbor, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was, you know, and I think that's something that we all need to be, and I think we all, I mean, we joke about common sense, but we really mean it. I mean, I think if you look at most actions that we take really should make common sense, and I realize a lot of court decisions, you look at them and you say, oh my God, where on earth did they come up with this? You know, we hope there's a thread of common sense even in court decisions.
Well,
and
sometimes the smarter we get and the harder we try, the more convoluted the outcome becomes, and you can really strain things to the breaking point. And I don't remember who it was. Get on the internet, Bob.
Yep.
Who was it that said common sense isn't really all that common?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
So
we'll
if our
out.
Listeners know that, you can
That's
call
right.
in and
right.
send to jeff@bobpittman.com.
That's right.
And tell us the answer to that, and Bob will put it out next week.
That's right. That'll be fun. All right. Now, I've known you for a long time, although I don't want to say how long because
I'm staring at your younger Bob picture up on the wall behind you. It's pretty hilarious. If you just turn a little bit to the side, I can get a before and after. And you look much the same. A few more wrinkles, and your hair is a little lighter in color.
Just a little bit.
It's grayer instead of darker. but you look pretty much the same, Bob. You're that's keeping
actually,
well.
That's actually a favorite picture.
If you were a loaf of bread, you'd be good for decades.
I know. So. I have enough preservatives in me, I think.
Well, that's my plan for immortality, is to eat enough things with bad chemicals in them so that I will have passed away, but you won't know it because the chemicals will just keep me going.
You know, I think it could work.
It's my theory.
I think it's very possible, and I'll try to help you on that one, too, and prove it.
Okay.
Now, all right, Dennis, I've got to ask you, how did you get into law?
Well, I had been a military officer and had attended Gonzaga University over in Spokane. Had a Jesuit upbringing in high school and college, and I was attracted, believe it or not, to ethics and why do we do things the way we do them. I went into the military where I served on active duty for 7 years. But about 4 years in, I kept thinking about my mom, who passed away in 2010.
Oh, boy.
And I know a lot of you have lost your folks, and it's a tough thing. But my mom, I remember my mom with sweetness and affection. She said you would be a good lawyer in part because I talk a lot. And all of you know that. So, big surprise. But the sense of right and wrong has been a thing for me my whole life. I think about it. I do my best to do the right thing or make up for the wrong thing when I commit one. And I just decided at 4 years in that I needed to do something different than be an Army officer, and it took me 3 years to figure out what that something was. And I was at the point where I was going to apply for the Army JAG program to be an Army lawyer, but I missed the cutoff. I was too senior.
Oh.
So I was then faced with, what do you really want to do? So I resigned and went to law school.
Okay.
And an interesting question is, how did I end up in estate planning?
Right.
It was through the National Network of Estate Planning Attorneys.
Okay.
I tripped across two of the most brilliant, thought-provoking attorneys that I've ever known in my life that had put together a system of teaching and training for trust-based practices.
Well, and of course, you're talking about Bob Asperdi and Reno Peterson.
Right, and I met you through them a year into that grand experiment.
Yep.
So today I'm part of and an owner of a company called Wealth Counsel that has about roughly 4,000 attorney members. And they're all people like you and me that are independent practitioners that just want to do the right thing and serve people. So I never expected to be an estate planner. I thought I was going to sue my way into goodness and prosperity, you know, be a plaintiff's attorney. That's just not what happened. I ended up helping individuals and families deal with their concerns and their fears, plan for their goals, and try to help them get good outcomes that were economically efficient.
Sure.
As well as the right thing to do for me and my family.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that, I mean, literally everybody needs to be talking about at some level, whether it's simple things like powers of attorney, living wills, and so forth, or more complex kinds of arrangements. But it's the what about me, I call it sometimes. You know, what happens to me? And obviously you can't think about your family if you're not thinking about yourself a little bit to make sure that they're going to be okay because you're okay.
You know, you're one of the best human beings I know, in addition to be a darn fine lawyer. But I don't think you started out purely focused on estate planning, did you?
No. I was really in the real estate area for quite a while. And I represented a really interesting fellow on an in-house basis. He was a true entrepreneur. His dad was the one who designed that first floating bridge across Lake Washington.
Wow.
Homer Hadley, and I worked with Dick Hadley and his group up in Seattle, and worked on, I called it drinking from the fire hose at the time.
I bet.
And we were working 7 days a week on projects all over the United States, or at least in different parts of the United States. I had a lot of fun, but I really wanted to be one-on-one with people, helping people with their challenges in life, whatever they might be, and not so much the big global, gee, look at the big office tower that I helped put up. That was fun, too, but not so much that, but the real everyday life, you know, down to the point of what goes on the TV when you're incapacitated, what TV show is going to be. In fact, what TV show would be playing for you, Dennis? If you're incapacitated, you can't communicate very effectively, but someone's reading your "what about me" statement, and what would we put on TV to make you happy today?
NCIS.
All right.
I don't know.
That's okay, but we wouldn't do it 24 hours a day.
Yes, you would.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know
okay.
if they have
See?
That many.
We're discovering things about Dennis Brislon today.
Yeah, it's my desire to be heroic in my lawyerly ways.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting, Bob, is that I find that the older I get, so I'm 23 years into my practice now. You're what?
31. Hard to believe.
And it's interesting how we're narrowing our understanding of what people find important.
Yeah.
Because we worry about external things like taxes or paying the light bill these days, the cost of gas. But truly, there are things that occur in life that you can deal with as they come up, and there are things that you cannot deal with well on an emergency basis. I've had clients in the last few years where a spouse has suffered from a psychosis, just all of a sudden a quick onset psychotic episode.
Yep.
How do you deal with that? I mean, it's unsatisfying to have to go to court to attempt to become a guardian for a loved one.
That's a nightmare.
It is. We've had children of families that have reach their end in an untimely way, you know, that were terminally ill kids. And in all these things that are shocking or frightening or darn right sad, and in all these things, the human spirit, with a little bit of helping and a little bit of propping up, can win, can move ahead. I've had families in tragedies create a charity that would speak for a loved one, often a child, but somebody that has left us before their time. Well, the good that can come out of that is for that person or that adult or that child, something that's precious and poignant to us from them.
That's right.
Capture that and pass it on. So
absolutely.
I found myself doing some of that work lately, which is, I mean, I don't know quite how to say it. It's sad. And it's poignant, and at the same time, it's extraordinarily meaningful.
It is. Very satisfying, I think, to know that you can help and participate in that process and ease the burden, but also help an awful lot of people. I mean, when someone sets up that scholarship fund to run in perpetuity, and every year someone learns about this child who passed before they were supposed to, but they're helped maybe with college tuition or whatever it might be, And they remember this person, and it makes an impact, and
it
helps them.
Did you ever see the movie of the elderly African-American woman? Her name escapes me. Mm. I've got the video, and I'll share it with you on my computer. Anyway, she saved up $500,000. She had been literally a washerwoman Southern United States University. Never went to college, never married, never had kids. She literally washed clothes with an old-fashioned washboard. Now, kids, don't try this at home. But it was a tub of water with a flat board with ripples on it, and she would dip the clothing into the water and then run the clothes up and down this rippled board to get the dirt and the suds out and stuff. Then she'd rinse it and do it again. That's what this woman did. She saved up $500,000. You know what she did? She gave it all to this Southern University through her will so that or actually she endowed a scholarship with her money because she was still living when this occurred. And what made it so touching was she just wanted some other kid to have a chance to go to college because she never did.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
I saw her standing with this young black gal who was a student there who was just all but crying and overcome that this woman, who had been a washerwoman, yeah. I mean, worked her fingers literally to the bone her yeah. whole life, had done this. And
it's amazing.
Every time I watch, I start bawling. You know, it just is. It just hits you on a level that yeah. you can't prepare for.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff we talk about every day, and maybe not quite so dramatic, but every bit is important with all of us.
So the good news is. Yeah. We can take care of normal business, like do
That's
a
right.
will or a trust or something
That's
to
right.
direct other people how to help us if we need it. But we can also create legacies, big or small. And this woman didn't have, I mean, maybe it wasn't even 500,000. That seems like a large number. It was something less, but,
right, but
it was
a really
her life
significant,
savings.
And the story is just so compelling. And the story.
It's the story, not the amount of money.
It's one. I mean, it's just a wonderful story. And I've really gotten to love the stories over the years. And when I think of people or see people or hear about things, and I'll think back to the story of their life and the stories that maybe they told and had
you
the
know,
opportunity to
when
tell.
When you go online to do your own estate plan
yeah.
or you buy a software package.
Yeah.
That's what you give up. I call it wisdom, but really what it is meaningful insight. And that's why we human beings still need each other.
Sure.
Because you don't necessarily get these unlooked for blessings by plan or
That's
by
right.
or by searching on the internet.
That's right. That's right. Hey, if you're just joining us, of course you can always catch the Bobcast starting tomorrow and listen to the entire discussion that we're having. But if you've just joined us, this is Bob Pittman. I'm talking to Dennis Brislon, a great friend and a true estate planning guru.
Yeah, we drank the Kool-Aid
That's
together,
right.
Bob. So,
but we don't bestow guru status to all that many people, and you qualify for the guru status.
Well, thank
so,
you.
They're just a handful of folks.
Now I want either a hat or a shirt.
Well, we're going to work on that. We got to work on maybe the shirt. I don't know if I can do hats, but we'll work on the shirt. But okay, I want to ask you now about search and rescue. What is the story? What are you doing? I mean, I know when I say search and rescue, it means something to you other than just, you know, I'm searching for my hat or something.
Well, unbeknownst to me, up to about 2003 or 2004, the people that I watched on TV that were up in the mountains getting an injured person out of the woods at 2 a.m. in the morning or going into avalanche areas to rescue a backcountry skier or volunteers, I was looking for something to do with my Jeep. So that when Susan asked me why I was spending so much money on it, I would be able to say, it's for the people. It's not for me.
So you had to find some people.
I needed my peeps. So anyway, by guess and by gosh in the internet, I discovered that search and rescue is a formal program in our state and pretty much every state. Our state has a statutory structure and then supplemented by the Washington Administrative Code that says we have a category of voluntary emergency workers. We have a number of them. But one of them is a search and rescue volunteer.
Okay.
You have to go through state-mandated certification process and then be in an organization. And the sheriff's department is responsible for search and rescue in our state.
I didn't realize that.
So every county has a variation of the search and rescue program, King County being so huge. Currently, we have about 900 volunteers distributed through 8 units. Each unit in our county has a specialty that it's known for. And anytime a 911 call occurs that could be a wilderness rescue, sometimes urban rescues for dementia patients who walk away, we get a call. We get paged out by the sheriff, okay. either all of us or the specific teams that are required, and we go if we can. We're unpaid. In King County, our units are each 501c3 publicly supported charities.
Okay.
But we buy our own gear, and that can run to many tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, I'll bet.
Our high-angle rescuers are Seattle Mountain Rescue. We have the very first roughly 55-year-old Explorer Search and Rescue organization. I think we were the first in the United States.
Hmm.
It was some of our mountain rescue people dreamt this up that were involved in scouting.
Right.
Our 4x4 unit, our dog unit, our incident support team. Let's see who I'm forgetting. Trackers.
Yeah.
Ski patrol, rescue team. We have something for almost everybody that wants to be involved in
That's amazing.
Helping.
That's amazing.
We have some stay-at-home folks that are support folks.
Sure.
But we all go through some state training. So people think that it's only stupid people that need to call search and rescue. That is untrue. You can be a smart people and slip on the ice or lose your way in a storm.
Absolutely.
A lot of things can happen.
Oh, yeah, you could be up. I mean, if it is out in the mountains and stuff, hiking, and anybody can get injured and hurt and need help.
We've had experts slip on a patch of ice and fall to their death. And could you say that they were being negligent? No, you could not. Things happen in life. Life is not a safe sport.
Well, and even if someone is being negligent at some point, does it mean we leave them and we abandon them at that point?
Our searchers throughout, my vice president, whose name is Garth Brown, I've got a great group of people that are on the executive board for King County Search and Rescue. We're part of a larger group of county volunteer organizations, and we get together and compare notes, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah.
We feel pretty strongly that people should not be penalized for a rescue. We don't want to discourage people from calling when they need help, which I know is your feeling about life. It's
right.
My feeling about life.
Yep.
We only have each other.
Yeah.
I mean, why would we want to make it difficult to call a neighbor for help?
Sure.
I know that there's, when you see people that do things that you go, boy, that was stupid, the tendency is to want to charge them or punish them economically for bailing them out.
You know, I think that right there is a mistake we're making in society anyway, just in general, not just for search and rescue, but just like trying to make everything in the world a crime.
Everything has a fault.
Everything, yeah. We've got to nail this person for this, nail this person for that. We've got to charge him or her for a rescue, let's say. Maybe they were stupid. Maybe they were negligent. But,
yeah.
Boy, that could be me right there, too.
Well, requiring perfection. It's
yeah.
a fairly high price
yeah,
for being alive.
Good luck.
You know, good
on
luck.
That.
Well, see, and so at least our emergency workers here, we are SAR technicians. We are unpaid professionals.
Mm-hmm.
We have standards we have to adhere to, and we're going through a review process right now of tightening those up and making them more uniform throughout the state.
I'll bet a lot of people don't have any idea about search and rescue.
They don't.
We know it's there. I mean, if someone said, hey, there's search and rescue, I'd say, well, okay, I think I've heard of it.
We need people that are outdoors folks or people that support outdoors activities.
Well, communications, I assume, is a
yeah,
big
we
area.
Need people to join, but we also need people to participate by giving a couple dollars to the charities. It's deductible.
So it is. It's a regular 501c3 charitable donation that you're making,
Pierce
just like
County,
to your church
right.
or school. And okay.
At the risk of offending my friends in Pierce
hey,
County.
It's okay. We're all over.
There is Pierce County Search and Rescue.
Okay.
There is King County, Snow County,
okay.
Kittitas County.
Sure.
All of us may be organized a little differently, but there are ways to make tax-deductible gifts to the search and rescue unit
yeah.
or the search and rescue association of your choice. Pretty much, we don't have paid professionals other than the sheriff's staff.
Right.
So a donation to search and rescue pretty much goes 100% to rescues.
Right. And, of course, the
buying equipment, you know.
So now the sheriff's department in each county supports search and rescue.
You have one or more sheriff's deputies that are the coordinators for the program.
Okay.
We have a detective who is our primary coordinator here. There is an assistant coordinator detective. And then there are some officers that are detailed formally to search and rescue as
right.
an additional duty.
Okay.
And then there are other deputies in the county that have been through training and are also backups. We get about 100. I was going to ask you, how many do you think we have? But I already gave it away.
Maybe 100.
Yeah, about 100.
About 100.
We have about 100 missions per year of
wow.
every kind and quality.
That's
from missing kids
wow.
to injured hikers or lost people. We do crime scenes, so we work with major crimes to assist in the investigations
right.
of missing persons
uh-huh.
or homicides.
Sure.
So we do that, which is sort of rare for SAR units.
Now, I shouldn't put you on the spot, but if someone wanted to get hold of or find some information on search and rescue, can they call you? Or
if it's
an
emergency, they call 911.
Right. But if it's just they want to get involved or they want to maybe donate or something?
Best way is go to King County. It's kasara.org. So it's KCSARA.org.
Okay.
Kasara.org. Or you can just search on Snohomish
right.
Search and Rescue
okay.
or Pierce Search and Rescue.
Whatcom County Search
yeah,
and Rescue.
Yeah, and you will get right to your local council. And all of us have on our websites ways to
yeah.
hit the public up for
yeah.
the occasional donation.
Well, but that's important. I think a lot of, I mean, again, I think people know search and rescue is there, but don't know much about it.
You'd be amazed. We get a lot of money from Microsoft in the form of matching grants. Oh. Microsoft.
I like matching stuff, I think.
Well, if you're a Microsoft employee and you donate hours to a charity, Microsoft will pay per hour. So they will give money to match the hours you put in.
That I didn't know.
It's tremendous.
I knew about the matching of dollars, but I didn't know that they would match
for time. If you donate time, they'll match it with money up to a certain level. Some other companies are doing that. And with all the pressure on public services and such right now, that's just golden.
Oh, I'll bet.
I really give Microsoft Boeing has been a great giver. The King County employees have a matching program. I'm sure others do as well.
I'm sure they do. I mean, it's amazing when you hear about it. And you hear, of course, Microsoft, of course, with Bill and Melinda Gates and the foundation they have and the different things they're involved in. But you forget sometimes Microsoft itself is a big supporter in the community.
It's tremendous. The company culture is to give back. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, since you and I are estate planners by trade and go to BobPittman.com. I'm going to plug BobPittman.com. And I'm not going to keep mentioning BobPittman.com.
Yeah, please don't mention BobPittman.com.
It's up to me once in a while to thank BobPittman.com for being here. So if you have a question, where do you go?
That's right. Yeah,
BobPittman.com. So anyway, you know, you and I talk a lot about individuals and families.
Yep.
And now we're talking about neighbors. The fact is, we're a global community, whether we like it or not. We are a local community. You better like it, because there is no or not.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've learned through Search and Rescue, and then also by joining the Washington State Animal Response Team.
Yeah, I want to hear about that in a minute, too.
That's a relatively new charity. It's in its fourth year. Many animal lovers and veterinarians and others, such as search and rescue volunteers, formed a disaster organization that's intended to help people rescue their livelihood, like farmers or people with horses, pigs, chickens. If Katrina happened up here, or if we had an earthquake like in Japan, or if we just have the Chehalis flooding again, public resources are overwhelmed instantly.
Yeah.
We need volunteers that have the training and the acumen to come in and help.
That's true.
And so the animal response team was formed for that. But we're finding that in America, as hard as we try to cover all the bases, sometimes you just don't have enough people and you have to call for help on a larger scale.
That's true.
Well, so those are the things I've been doing lately anyway.
Makes sense. Hey, we've got a caller. I think Corey is on the line with a question. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, good to have you with us.
Thank you. I have a quick question. I would definitely like to get involved in search and rescue and happy to volunteer my time. I live in Pierce County. The one thing I am short on is funding. You know, you talked about some of the gear and the equipment costing, you know, quite a bit of money. And is there any provisions to help the volunteers afford that?
Oh, good question.
Well, not really, but it really depends. When I say tens of thousands of dollars, I was thinking about my Jeep and the radios and, you know, every piece of clothing I have. And that's probably an overstatement. Remember that.
And just in case your wife's listening, that was critical
was
that you
kidding,
get all
honey.
That.
It's not for me. It's for the people. First of all, it's all tax deductible if you can state that it was for this charitable endeavor you're in. The radios that I'm in a mobile unit, and so I've invested more heavily in vehicular equipment and vehicular-mounted radios that people that are in ground-based units don't need to purchase.
Sure.
So I have ground-based equipment and air support equipment and technical swiftwater equipment. I'm in a variety of job descriptions within search and rescue, and I have bags for each one. That isn't typical. Most people pick a love or an interest, and so we're talking about general backpacking equipment. And
so it's possible that someone like Corey might have some of the equipment.
Well, you
that
probably
he
needs have most
already.
Of it except for radios and the training.
And then the radio, you would find out what it is you're supposed to acquire.
You don't necessarily have to buy your own radio.
Okay.
So units, when I mentioned that we're publicly supported, when people donate money to the unit, the units either pay for training that we need somebody to go get that is nationally recognized training of some kind that isn't covered by the government. The government also pays for many types of training. You might have to pay for your plane ticket.
Sure.
Most of our training is local, though. So general backpacking gear, if you've got a tent and boots and clothing and stuff like that, you're already almost home free.
Okay.
Radios, the units often buy, all of our units have some number of radios that they issue out to members. So we never want anybody thinking you can't join because you don't have the money. Of course you can. And we have stashes of equipment for those people that don't have the money to purchase their own or aren't ready to yet.
Very good.
We tell people, buy nothing until you're sure you want to do this. We'll help it, you make it work. So, Corey, if you're a 4x4 kind of person, you can get a hold of me at it's rescuecat@hotmail.com. So it's rescuecat@hotmail.com. Tell me what your interests are, and I will hook you up with the people in the particular Pierce County unit you want to know. Or you can just go on the Pierce County Sheriff's website, find Search and Rescue, and you can, with a couple clicks, you'll be there anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. And sort of in my interest to get involved, I signed up for the Washington State Search and Rescue Conference that's happening at the end of May. So
I'm going to be going there.
Oh.
I'm going to
oh,
be
great.
There, so look me up and I can introduce you around.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for the information.
Corey, get in touch with me and I'll squire you around and introduce you to who's who.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Hey, thanks, Corey.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call very much.
See, there's plenty of people that want to be neighbors. And
I think so.
You know, when I start blabbing about money, I'm sending the wrong message. You don't need money to do this. I say you just need a bad attitude and a pair of hiking boots.
Right. Well, and the time, of course. Obviously, if you could have a bunch of money and have no volunteers with the time to actually put into it.
And the way it works here is that if a call-out occurs and you can go, you can go.
Yeah.
But if you can't go, nobody expects you to. We have enough volunteers, or the pages keep coming.
Sure.
So, and if we run out of, let's say in King County, we have a hairy mission up in Snoqualmie Pass, and it turns into a three-day deal. Well, we don't have enough people, even with 900 on the roster, to cover that kind of a time frame with the amount of searching and area we need to cover. So we call our buddies in all the other counties.
Okay, and everybody
volunteers. We're a statewide resource.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's so much fun. Now, what's the animal one you mentioned? I have not heard of that one before.
So a couple of our neighbors, our friends, that are primarily living in Enumclaw, but a couple others in Kirkland and elsewhere, witnessed Katrina and were horrified by it. And many of them have taken training from Humane Society of the U.S. or AHA or any of the national disaster relief organizations aimed at animals. And right after Katrina, within a year, we had the Chehalis flooding, and all these animals died and horrible things happened. People lost their farms and it was just overwhelming, and not to put too fine a point on it, Japan.
Oh, my.
So these things happen, and even if you plan for them, sometimes things are way worse than we could have anticipated.
Absolutely.
So a couple of my buddies got together and decided that they were going to form a state-available resource for disasters. Now, you may think, what a bunch of bleeding hearts. Yeah, here we go, squeezy, loving animal stuff. So let me tell you, I'm a search and rescue professional. Let me tell you what I've learned. If people love their animals in this country. If you do not take the animals out, my life is at risk twice. I go in to get the people, and I go in to get them out, and I'm assisted by the military and the sheriff and the fire guys and EMTs, all of us first responders. We go in and get you out. And in the past, things were said, Bob, like, well, we'll go back. You can go back and get your animals tomorrow.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No.
Or they said, well, we've got to get you to a shelter, but they don't accept animals. So if you love your animal, and I tell you that, I can take you, you must leave your dog.
Oh, good luck on
what
that
are you going to say?
Good luck. Go to my website, look at the front page, you see
it
a picture
of Scooby. It says pet planning on there,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you see a picture
I
of Scooby.
I saw the Scooby thing on
there,
man.
Right there.
Well, you know what you would say. Screw you.
Absolutely.
I'm not going.
That's right.
So now, I as a first responder have a problem.
Yeah.
I've got a human being in a danger zone. I am emotionally and physically motivated to save you.
Right.
I can't force you.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you behind.
Yeah.
Might I and my buddies have to come back through to try to get you out again later when the flood goes higher?
Yeah, very possibly.
So here's what's happening. We learned this from, I can't even pronounce the name, but it was a Midwestern state.
Uh-huh.
And they had a chlorine spill for this town. Oh. They evacuated the whole town. It was in the winter. They put a National Guard blockade around it. And every morning in the snow, they said, come back and get your animals. You can't take them because it's deadly. It's too dangerous. There's a chlorine cloud in here. Every morning in the new fallen snow, there would be footprints going back into town and coming out of town, sometimes with little baby footprint, you know, little animal footprints. We've learned this lesson over and over and over again. Also, there's a human compassion and care element. If you've just lost everything, but you saved your cat.
Oh, who cares about the stuff? You want the,
you can replace you the stuff, the but you got Muffy and Fluffy there with you.
That's right.
So here's what's happened. President Bush, like him or lump him, did sign the PET Act. The PET Act doesn't have very many teeth in it, but it at least says all you people out there that do disaster planning must include animal planning and animal evacuation in your emergency plans. But there were no, there are some issues with the law because it sets the commandment there but doesn't really give any money for it. But in the this you may have seen people in your neighborhood that are doing CERT training, Citizens Emergency Response Team training. They wear like green backpacks, and this is local training.
We just thought they were part of a cult.
They are.
Cult,
the cult of I'm prepared and I am here to help you. I am from your government, and I am here to help. No. Anyway, these are volunteers that are trained in light urban search and rescue, like how to do cribbing so that in a fallen structure they could get you out without dying themselves, and first aid and assessment and all kinds of things. Those folks have just released on the FEMA website a new package on animal rescue as part of the CERT program. Then as we kind of go up the chain in terms of local response and up, at the county level and above, we have various kinds of volunteer search and rescue, volunteer fire, professional fire, you know, all that stuff that a county can call in or the state can call in. And then days later, some federal support can start coming in. It takes a while to gear it up.
Sure.
So, guys, we're on our own
yeah.
for the first 24 to 72 hours.
I don't think people realize that.
Well, I tell people 72 hours is the bare minimum for you to be self-sufficient. And if you're okay, then and only then should you think about helping anybody else.
Sure.
If you're a basket case, please don't help me. I got enough trouble. So that's kind of the warp and woof of this, and it ties directly into our estate planning.
Yeah.
Because you and I have talked many times, Bob, about the fact, and I'm going to quit. You're letting me run with the mic, and I apologize.
Yeah, I know.
But you tied into my passion here. You and I have talked many times about people wanting to help their kids and grandkids.
Yeah.
How are they?
Yeah.
I mean, can you really help your children and grandchildren if you are now destitute?
Absolutely not.
So
you've got to take care of the me part first. It sounds selfish, but it really isn't.
So Muffy and Fluffy need a pet plan, how to evacuate them if you need to leave your home. We do now have emergency shelters that are animal friendly. So we're well aware that we won't get you if we don't get Muffy.
Yep.
So we're going to do that.
So much sense.
If you have a horse or a llama, I don't like llamas very much, but alpacas, they're sweet. A rabbit. Iguana rescue.
Yeah.
You could call 911 if there's an emergency, and if it's animal related, animal control will be called, or the Washington State Animal Response Team will be called. Now, it does take time to gear up for a horse down. July 4th, I was up with a rescue team getting a six-year-old Mustang out of a very dangerous situation. He tumbled down a river fall in the Mount Baker Forest, about 150 feet, and was standing in very treacherous footing with another 150-foot fall behind him. We literally had to rappel down. My wife had forced me to bring carrots with me, which I thought were silly.
But it was
smart. We used the carrots to get the horse to turn around on his own length without breaking a leg.
The horse must have been scared to death.
He was hungry. He'd been standing there 18 hours.
Oh, man.
he went.
And I can't imagine trying to muscle a horse out of a bad situation.
Horses are dangerous. Yeah. They're big,
well,
and
a
if
big,
they kick,
big animal.
If they kick, your
sure.
your ribs are gone.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. He went, carrots? You could just see him go, carrots? And I swear, Susan will never let me live this down because she was right.
Yeah.
Yes, dear, you were right. We got the horse. I was afraid he was going to break a limb because he literally had to turn in this tight little car width canyon.
Yeah.
He had to turn around so we could aim him up the hill and hopefully haul him up the hill. Well, no sooner did we get his little footies on the hill, he turned around and looked at Carrot Guy, saw that he was coming, and then ran up the hill without our help.
Oh, that's great.
So we were – his name was Twister, that horse, Twister. I called it the tail of Twister.
That's great.
That's what I was hanging on to trying to get up the hill.
I like it.
Yeah, so anyway, the animal response team is people that have studied field rescue. So that means ropes and tackle and rappelling and – it's physical activity.
Now, how do you find out more about the animal rescue?
It's Washington, S-A-R-T, dot org.
Okay.
Washington, S-A-R-T, dot org.
We're going to have to get Jeff to put up some of these
links. Well, we'll do some links to you. We'd love to have you help us promote
this.
Three kinds of training there. It's field response and or transport.
I see.
Transport has
or maybe bring in the carrots too.
Carrot people are in transport, I think.
Yeah.
And then we do emergency sheltering, which means we can actually go to like the Monroe Fairgrounds or the Enumclaw Fairgrounds or somewhere like that,
sure,
and establish a full blown trauma center, emergency care center.
Right.
We have vets, we have vet techs, we look at injured animals, we seclude sick animals, but the idea is to shelter for a short period of time, animals to reunite them with their owners.
Right. That's so great.
So there aren't a lot of, at the risk of offending others in the animal care community, I don't really know of an organization that has this full capability right here in Washington except for us. There are other organizations that do bits and pieces of it.
Sure.
Some are very, very good. But Washington SART is a full-blown rescue operation for emergencies, for disasters.
Yeah, that is so exciting.
Now, we don't have enough people. If we had a big one or a countywide disaster, we'd probably be looking at walk-in volunteers to help us.
I mean, imagine.
It's just huge, you know.
Well, you know, and people who own, own horses, but have pets, have animal companions and friends and stuff, need to be involved.
Well, you know, folks that own animals, you need to have your own evacuation and care
plan. Absolutely,
If you're in a flood zone, make a deal with your next-door neighbor on high ground to bring your animals up there.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I think that this is very generous of you letting me talk about my avocations
here. Oh, these are so great, though. People just really want to know about this.
It's not about me. I got to tell you, I am extraordinarily humbled by the people that I serve with.
Yeah.
I mean, every walk of life. I mean, I'm telling you, we have students. We have plumbers. We have doctors and surgeons and one or two lawyers.
Lawyers.
Which, you know, I mixed bag there. But as long as we keep our mouths shut. A
couple of judges probably hanging out.
We do. We have some judges. Mama's Mama Passarelli has the Soup Ladies, which is a charity that brings food out to first responders.
That's great.
And there's at least one judge in there who serves soup and hot food at 2 a.m. in the morning to us up in the mountains. I mean, I'm telling you, folks, it's humbling.
It's exciting.
It's fun. It's meaningful. It's not that, Corey, if you're listening, it's only expensive if you make it expensive
me.
But you don't need a lot of money. You just need the willingness to get trained.
Sure.
And then if a call out goes out and you can go without harming your family or your job, you go.
Yeah.
And if you can't go, your buddies will pick it up.
That's so great. So, again, if someone wants to be involved in either the animal end or search and rescue.
If you type in Washington Search and Rescue or Pierce County Search and Rescue on the internet,
you're gonna get the information.
You'll find resources.
Okay.
For animal response, there are a number of charities that if you type in disaster animal, you may or may not get us. But if you're interested in what I'm doing, it's WashingtonSART.org. It's based in Enumclaw, but it's a statewide, mostly Western Washington right now, resource. And we do puppy dog rescues, kitty cat rescues, llama rescues. We even did an iguana rescue.
Oh, man.
We do horses down wells.
I don't know if I'd want to get involved in, like, the cobra rescue team.
I'm thinking that cobra I'm going to say a prayer for his little Bronx zoo
I'm not
soul.
So sure.
snakes,
that's a tough one.
Snakes are kind of, you know.
All right, is it okay if someone wants to email you a question?
Sure. You can email me about life or law at, let's try rescuecat@hotmail.com. It's R-E-S-Q.
Oh, okay.
C-A-T. See how clever I was? Rescue
I
cat.
Like it. R-E-S-Q.
That's even on my license plate.
R-E-S-Q.
Yeah, a little play on words there.
At
hotmail.com.
Hotmail.com. All right. Hopefully Jeff has taken all that down and we'll get that.
Jeff's copious spare time.
That's
He's
right.
going to be one of my volunteers.
Yeah, we were working Jeff a lot. I mean,
well, tell me about your pet planning. So I've only seen a couple websites where people – what caused you to put pet planning up?
Oh, you know we've had pets over the years, had dogs, and the last two that we've had are rescue dogs. They're folk. They're
so you
guys,
got them from the pound?
Yeah. Well, no, they were from rescue groups. And they were dogs who were abandoned by their owners. It's sort of hard to imagine, isn't it?
You know, we've picked up. So remember, I said my animal rescue group, the Washington Washington State Animal Response Team. We go pick up abandoned horses.
Isn't that amazing?
People think that a horse can fend for themselves by dropping them up in the pass.
Oh, give me a break.
They
Come
can't.
On.
These
how,
are domesticated well, animals,
they?
Folks.
How could they?
No, they can't. When we pick them up, they're bony and nearly starved.
Oh, no. It's so
their
sad.
Hooves are bad. And
yeah, we love rescue animals, and I think in the future that's
well, they love you.
That's
I'm
who
telling
we're going to have, our rescue dogs.
There's no better pet to have than one that somebody didn't do right by because they know. My wife, in our first house, we had some cats that she ended up putting like a doghouse on our deck and was feeding these pets. Well, when it came time to move, you know, I was telling her, we can't take these cats. We've got our own pets. And, well, you know how that one worked
out. Right. Yeah.
So we have.
Have you got pictures? Let me see.
When we open the door, you cannot find those feral cats. They don't want to go outside.
No.
They are just happy sleeping on a bed or hiding in the house.
Watching a little cable TV.
You know, they kick back.
That's right. That's right. I love it.
Well, I think that we have this fiction that animals can fend for themselves, but not if they didn't grow up in that environment. And their lives aren't very long if you let them run around.
But now when it comes to your estate planning, though, looking at Dennis's estate plan, obviously.
It's perfect.
If something happens to the two of you, though, someone's got to be there to take in your gang.
So I have Susan and I created a pet plan.
Yeah.
In our living trust.
Okay.
And we equipped the people. So since we don't have a built-in caretaker called a son or daughter.
Right.
We have some dear friends. Carl Waldman, for one.
Oh, sure. Great guy.
My partner, Tom Lofton, is in there. Matt Croft in Seattle. I hope you're all listening because there's no pay. Just my undying thanks.
That's right.
From heaven, maybe. So, you know, the thing is that we put a pet plan in there, and then we took care of family and friends and some charities.
Very good. But so you've got a plan in there.
I do.
So that if something happens, when the time comes, I guess I shouldn't say if, but when the time comes that we lose you, someone can step in with the legal authority, somebody's identified, and can step in and take the gang in and make sure that they have a good home.
Remember I wrote something
so
and
important.
Put it on the bulletin board called the Pookie Plan back in...
Yeah.
1995.
That's right. I'd forgotten.
I was going to say 2005. It was actually 1995.
Yeah.
I created something called the Pookie Plan. And it was all over the then bulletin board systems, but it's on the internet all over. And I've actually seen different people claim it was their work. No, it wasn't. It was mine.
Sort of like that Seinfeld episode with the umbrella thing, the twirl.
Anyway, the Pookie Plan is a pretty simple plan that you can put in a power of attorney or you can put it in a will or a trust.
Yeah.
And it essentially says, my pets, it was named after my 20-year-old black cat, Pookie, who just loved us. She was a rescue.
Uh-huh.
Or my wife got her actually in Germany and brought her back.
Wow.
Anyway, the Pookie plan essentially just said, you have authority to care for my fuzzy, furry family members.
Right.
Because my pets are considered members of my family, and I want you to make whatever arrangements you need to put them with a loving family and make it work or let them live out their life.
Yeah.
So it
But
makes,
that's critical. Simple, but critical.
I call it just stewardship.
It
I
is.
Have, look, these pets didn't force me to take them in. I chose to.
Yep.
So for me, I consider it part of my integrity plan and part of my personal ethical outlook on life. Absolutely. That if I say I'm going to undertake a duty, now it's up to me to honor that.
Yeah, and we all have an obligation. We get the great benefits of having our friends with us, but we have an obligation to do right by our animal friends and make sure that even though it's simple planning, but it's got to be there.
Well, if we don't do it, it doesn't get done, no. And you can't be assured. There are all kinds of people in this world, and some people don't look at animals the way
you and I
do. I don't go so far as to put an animal life on a par with a human life. Some of my friends do. I can understand it. I think it's...
I know, but you don't have to put them on the par. It's just that we have an obligation, and they're
right.
Great friends and better friends sometimes than our people friends.
Well, whether you go there or you don't, I'm going to say this differently. It's about human compassion. It's about empathy for living things. It's about a respect for nature.
Yep.
And more importantly, it's about voting with your own integrity. If I undertake a duty, nobody forced me to do it. But don't I have an obligation to do it right or do it consistent with what I said my beliefs were?
You do.
I think people get sideways, Bob, when they say one thing and do another. We need to be in sync with what we do needs to be somewhat in sync with, not perfect, but somewhat in sync with what we say.
And procrastination, I think of that when we talk about pets. I had a fellow stop by the office. Usually people make appointments, but this is several years ago. He would just stop by the office. He had lost his wife. He had no kids. He had six cats. And he had a pretty good size estate. And he would just stop and talk. And I said, well, you know, what's your phone number? And well, I don't have a phone anymore because there's nobody to call and nobody calls me. I mean, it's really sad. And we would talk, and he wanted to take care of his cats, right, if something happened to him. He wanted to set up, we talked about some little charitable stuff he could do, a little fund to help seniors. He wanted to help people who were in the senior crowd have pets because it's expensive.
Companion animals.
Yeah. And so we talked, and I said, well, you've got to get, I said, we can talk about it all day long, but you got to get it in writing. You got to, you know, but he would never commit to it. And one day I got a call from an attorney up in King County where this fellow lived. And the attorney said, is this Mr. Pittman? And I always worry when people say Mr. Pittman.
I know. What did they do now?
Me. It's Bob. You know?
I'm in trouble now.
But he says, is this Mr. Pittman? I said, yeah. He says, well, he says, we're in Mr., you know, we'll call him Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones's house here, and we're looking through. And he's got all these papers everywhere about meetings he's had with you, and your card is in several spots and all this. He says, I just want to know one thing. Did Mr. Jones make a will? And I had to say no. He says, thank you very much. And I followed up later, and I found out what happened to the six cats. You can guess.
Yeah, they become disposable.
And they were disposed of.
So, you know, that's a tough one just because my little friend Peyton, and I don't know if Peyton or her mom or dad are hearing this, but she believes in comfort critters, among other things. And, you know, what's kind of interesting about that is animals bring people joy. They ask for a little food, water, and shelter in return. And, you know, even cold-hearted people that seem real hard on the outside kind of melt when a cat curls up in their lap.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, not everybody. Here's the deal. Whatever is important to us, we should protect it. If it's our stock account or it's our job, the things that help us live deserve some of our attention.
Absolutely.
But we also need to understand that things change. Life is movement. You can't stand still. You can't. If you're standing still, everything's moving around you, with you or without you or on top of you or through you. Everything else is moving.
Yep.
So I guess you and I, you know, through the years, we've told everyone, sit down and do a simple will or a complex will or a trust. Or you don't need to worry about the tools.
No.
Worry about the job.
Right.
What is it that's important to you?
Absolutely. If someone wants to get hold of you.
They can't.
They can't. You got an unlisted phone number. No, you don't. You have a phone number. Probably everybody has it.
Well,
but just in case someone listening doesn't have the phone number.
I bet you I'm going to have, very soon I will have links on bobpittman.com.
That's true. You will. But so, what, but But how would they get hold of you if they want to get hold of Dennis Brislon?
Thank you. Brislon Lofton, L-O-F-T-O-N, is the name of my firm. We're in Kirkland.
And you got a great website, I know.
We do. And it's brislonlofton.com, which makes it, it's like an intelligence test. If you can't spell the names or if you misspell them, I'm sorry, you can't hire me. Our phone number is 425-803-9500.
So 425-803-9500.
You have a mind like a steel trap. You can call Bob and say, who is that whack job you had on the Bobcast, the animal guy?
No.
There are a lot of ways to care for ourselves, and then with a little bit of leftover energy, make a difference.
Absolutely. It's so important, and we all need to take care of ourselves, take care of the people we care about, take care of our concerns. You know, I was thinking to myself, too, here you donate a lot of your time, if you look at a year, to your various groups. And
let's just say that my pro bono hours have skyrocketed.
Big time. But you know what? Now, I hate to think about bad things, but when the time comes that we lose you, all of a sudden, that person who's all those hours.
What a downer.
I know. I shouldn't do that. But I'm just thinking to myself, you know, for all of us out there who do donate to various groups, and whether it's search and rescue or whoever it might be, think about your replacement, and maybe you need to put something in your planning to help replace you, because to replace you, of course, there's nobody could replace Dennis Brislon. We know that, but
even if that's not true, because I'm currently the president of King County Search and Rescue, and I told him, like Barack Obama. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
I'm going to be a one-term president.
Yeah.
That was my little political jibe
there.
That's
okay.
Susan's going to charge me $1 for saying that, because when we express political opinions that irritate the other one, we charge each other money. We always need to have succession for the things that are important to us.
You do.
Everything. My law firm.
Yeah.
In search and rescue, whatever leadership positions I hold, it's my job to prepare the next guy or gal.
One of the toughest places that's true. One of the toughest places I've been, it's in a good way, but I visited a while back, not a food bank, but a clothing bank. I don't know if you've been to a clothing bank much. I mean, I had a really hard time, coming away without looking like I had a tear coming down. I mean, I just went in and I walked through, and I realized, thought of all the kids and adults too, people trying to find work, people who are going to school in the same shirt day after day. I mean, they're and they get to come in to this clothing bank, and they're not all new clothes, but they're
serviceable and clean.
Clothing bank is so important. So the people who are working, volunteering, I would have a tough time, because it would just be so hard emotionally to be there, but so important. And if you're there, I mean, replace yourself. Be prepared in your documents, your will or your trust or whatever, to replace yourself in the clothing bank, too.
But you know what? People are very grateful for a little bit of help.
Yeah.
And what I learned, you know, in search and rescue, we're there because we want to be, but you would never find one of us volunteers. You really wouldn't find somebody hogging the limelight or expecting thanks. It frankly makes us uncomfortable.
Sure.
We go out there, we do our thing, we have an outbrief, we go home. We're not looking for the family to hug us. Because we know that whatever happened was stressful. And really, we're just neighbors helping neighbors, and that's the thanks.
And this gets to my absolute all-time favorite word, and a word with real meaning, is the word respect. I love that word. I think and that makes me think of respect, because you respect the people you're helping, you respect yourself, your colleagues. It's that word respect. In fact, the world would be a better place if every time we're going to do something, we thought to ourselves, okay, is this respectful or not? Am I including that word in what I'm doing, my actions?
You just gave me a little glimmer here. It isn't big changes that are so profound. It's a whole bunch of little ones. You know, you don't have to commit to a lifetime of support. I would submit that working in that clothing bank would take the same kind of outlook, that you do it because you feel good, you count, you are making a difference for someone, and they are so thankful. And it's nothing disreputable, quite the contrary. When families are touched by something like bringing a Thanksgiving meal or any of these things, they're just thankful. And it can be a profound, private thing. It doesn't need to be some big deal. No. I honestly will tell you that the people that I love and serve with in search and rescue are the grandest people who do this without any expectation that somebody's going to thank them. We don't want personal thanks. We'd rather have you write a check to the association or and families where we've helped someone, even where it's been somebody died. They're thankful that we brought their loved one home to them at some cost and risk to ourselves, although we don't put searchers at risk beyond what we have to. You know, I mean, it's always a calculus of cost and benefit, always. Because you don't want to lose five people to try to get one person. We can't.
No.
But what we can do is, within our training, do the things that make a difference for people.
Yep.
And when we bring a person back, we talk about it among ourselves. We always psychoanalyze what we did good, what we could have done better, maybe what we didn't do very well. Because the next time out, when it's you or it's your loved one, will be a little bit better. So we also have learned in disasters, it's rarely one thing that kills somebody. It's a host of little mistakes. It's this one plus this one plus this one. And you can track it. And what horrifies you is one break in that chain would have had a different result.
Yeah.
Just one.
Wow.
So we ask people, I know we're jumping around a little here. It's like anything in life. A little bit of preparedness goes a long way.
Absolutely.
And might be the one thing that breaks the chain of disaster.
Yep.
If you go into the woods, take your 10 essentials. You know, you want to have some matches. You want to have a cell phone with you.
Right.
Turn it off if you're in the backwoods, by the way.
Yeah.
So the battery doesn't go dead.
All right, so the 10 essentials, what are they?
Oh, man, don't do the test. I think it's a car and
a four-wheel
drive. It's spare clothing. Hypothermia kills.
Yeah, some of the 10.
It's going to be, I'll give you at least five of them.
All right.
It's sort of food, water, shelter. You want to have some spare clothes. Carry a little backpack in the woods.
But even the matches you mentioned.
Well, you want to have matches. You want to have some signaling devices. You want to have your cell phone with a charged battery.
Right.
And turn it off.
Yeah.
When you're in the woods, your cell phone is searching for a tower that may be distant.
Yeah, you're burning up battery life.
You're burning up the battery life.
Sure.
Do you know that, I don't have the stats for this, but the general feeling among SAR people that have done this 20 or 30 years is that a typical three-day mission has now dropped to 6 to 8 hours because of cell phones.
Wow.
Well, people have GPSs, cameras, and a phone all in one, you know? So, It's really, I know I'm forgetting many things, but if you have food, water, shelter of some kind with you, like a coat, you want things that will keep you warm and dry, have a little something to eat, have something that you can hydrate with, and have fire-making materials and some signaling devices.
Right. Makes perfect sense.
Well, if have a knife.
But how often do people go out and they don't have things?
Oh, you ought to see what I carry.
Yeah,
man, I do need a Jeep.
We'll do a remote broadcast sometime, and we'll come down there
with
the camera.
I'll carry that too.
That's right. Boy, well, I really want to say thanks to you, Dennis, for stopping by to spend some time with us. But I hope you're going to come back.
Well, I'd love to.
And make Common Sense and Justice Network a home away from home for you.
Well, I plan to, and likewise, I think you and I have some projects in mind.
Yeah.
And
we're going to have some fun.
And folks, if you want to volunteer in something, take a tiny little risk. Find something that you have an affinity for and interest in and go check it out.
Yeah.
I mean, volunteer land isn't as bad as you may think it is. People only expect you to say what you do and do what you say. And if you can give an hour a month or an hour a day, it's up to you.
Absolutely. It's terrific, though.
You make a difference.
That's right. You really do make a difference, whether it's the hour of the month or the hour of the day. You make the difference and make a difference for all of us. So we've been talking to Dennis Brislon, one of my all-time favorite people, and
it's
happens
just one
to be
big,
an attorney.
Don't be hugging me, Bob. It's one big love fest
here. We have a great time. I've 20 years, I guess.
We've been friends a long time.
It's been a long time, and I have always appreciated you being around and helping me from time to time, too.
You know, all kidding aside, what is most meaningful to me in our friendship is that it's genuine and it's humble, and you and I help each other. I know you can call me, I can call you, and we do.
Yep.
And for better or worse for the Puget Sound public, It's your fault I got on the radio.
That's right. So, hey, that's okay. I'm happy to lay claim to that. Anytime,
you are. You're my mentor.
All right, everybody. Be sure to stop by the Common Sense and Justice Network. You can go to csjnetwork.com. You can actually, that's the best way, csjnetwork.com. Stop by there. Check out the archive. We've got some great, if you're a history buff, I just got to do a promo real quick for Justice Gary Alexander is the historian for the courts. He's a real treasure, and I don't appear before the court, so I feel like I can make a comment or two because I'm not trying to get anywhere here. But he's just so much fun to listen to. And the history, if you go back into the territorial days, we were a territory for something like 36 years, very long time as a territory. And the Supreme Court justices would ride horseback and ride around from place to place holding court. And he's got some fun stories in that Bobcast that you just, there's the jailing of a Supreme Court justice, martial law being declared, fun things. Listen to that. I encourage you, if you have any kind of interest in history at all, you got to listen to that. But check out the archive, and please send us your comments. Send them to jeff@bobpittman.com. Give us a call during the program. Let us know things you'd like to hear about on future programs, and we'd just love to take your questions and talk about you. And we will promise to treat us all with respect. So stay in control, I guess, of your legal affairs, at least until next week. We're here each and every Wednesday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific time, with the live stream. And then the next day, the Bobcast is available. So we'll be watching for you right here on the Common Sense and Justice Network.